You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Desperate. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
And this is a podcast where we take a nice little stroll down Wisteria Lane of ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. It's been a while since it's been on the air, but we do a recap of every episode ever. Mm-hmm. And right now we are about 30 episodes in. That puts us in season two.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we're more than that.
We're more than that. They had a long season back then.
I know. I'm like, I'm used to the 10 episodes, but now we're like 24.
Yeah, it's so many. But that's where we're at. Today we're going to be recapping season two, episode 17, titled Could I Leave You? The answer is probably yes. But the structure of this podcast, how it's going to go down, is we are going to talk a little bit about what happened last episode so you're not completely lost. And then we're going to recap the episode today that I just mentioned. You can watch it on Hulu or Amazon Prime. And before that, we give you some desperate deeds of our own as well, just to get you warmed up, just to give you a little giggle usually. We wrap it all up by evaluating the episode on several different scales, including a fuck, marry, kill, a housewife or husband of the week. We'd love to have more of those, but their husbands usually, they don't suck as bad as first season.
Yeah.
You know, they're not the best either. We do a 5-apple rating on where this episode falls out of 5 apples. And that's how it goes. But before that, if you haven't already liked and followed us on all the platforms and rated and reviewed, we would much appreciate if you do that. And if you have any qualms with our quality, you know, our structure, let us know. Send us a message. We are open to feedback. So we would love that if you could do that for us. But yeah, I guess we can talk about what went down last episode, episode 16.
Yes. I'll just start with Susan. So Susan, our golden gal, she was finally admitted to the hospital for the splenectomy that we've been talking about for like a million episodes, it feels like, at this point. She gets some flowers delivered to her by Dr. Ron, who I'm convinced, honestly, that his first name might be Doctor. But anyway.
So first name Doctor, last name Ron.
Because they always call him Dr. Ron. Every character does. Basically, he has flowers delivered and like with a nice little note. And she's all excited about it. And he kind of makes a point that he wants to move the relationship further along. And she's very lukewarm about this idea, I would say. Especially since she's now married to her ex-husband, Carl, for his insurance, which she has not told Dr. Ron. So he's not part of insurance fraud. So Carl visits the hospital and gives her a hard time, teases her about the romantic card. Oh, sorry. Before that happened, though, the nurse had kind of, like, talked to Susan because this nurse is, like, obsessed.
So then Carl spills that they're married.
Yeah. So basically Carl tells the nurse, like, in an offhanded comment that that's his wife. The nurse gets really upset and confronts Susan about it. And Susan runs after her and tells her what I just said, basically, about trying to avoid getting Dr. Ron in trouble. The nurse agrees not to say anything because as long as she's not cheating, it's all good. As Susan is finally going into surgery, she sees Mike in the waiting room, and as she's about to go under the knife, she expresses her love for Mike, which leads to a very awkward moment for Dr. Ron, and then the nurse lets it slip that she's married, and then makes a comment about how he always has poor taste in women, which I kind of agree with at this point, because Susan has played this so poorly.
Well, Dr. Ron made a mistake. She was, like, drugged up. Why would he tell her that he loves her right then?
Yeah, I think that is definitely a fair point. That is on him. However, I think Carl also makes a good point, though, beforehand, because he and Susan have, like, this heart-to-heart, kind of, where he basically says, like, you don't even have strong feelings for this guy. Like, you're just stringing... Like, he basically accuses her of stringing him along. And Susan doesn't really deny it. Like, she's straight up admits to that.
I think she gets, like, nervous by that comment.
But I do feel, like, definitely on Dr. Ron for asking her while she was doped up, because she could have said any name when you're doped up. The last name she heard before she went to surgery. But To be fair, though, she did have some skeletons in the closet that she probably should have been more upfront about.
Just a few. Yeah. Well, Gabby and Carlos, our last episode, we left them shopping for a child, basically. And I say shopping because they paid a lawyer $20,000 to help them find a child because they got denied by their adoption agency. Because not because they weren't good parents, they made a scrapbook. That's what they spent the episode doing. They made a portfolio, a fake portfolio with like pictures of them being good godparents to Lynette's kids to like find a good adoptive mother. And then Helen Roland, John's mom, ancient throwback, John Roland. He was busy starring in John Tucker Must Die at this point. His mom is like working at the agency that they go to. And she's like, so Gabby used to rape my son. And she says it that bluntly. Mm-hmm. And then she also says that Carlos got put away for slave labor. So you're like, oh, okay. And she's like, I'll handle their case for now. So they get fucked by that. And then they're like, whatever, money can solve this problem, which we're still wondering where they get their money from because neither of them work now, it seems. And they're still rolling in money. So they pay this guy $20,000. That's where we left them.
Mm-hmm. And then Lynette and Tom are working together, as we all know. And Tom begins to show some serious resentment towards Lynette because she's the boss everywhere. Which, yes, for sure at work she is his boss. He's got to let that one go. But at home, he takes it really personally and starts kind of being a little petty about just like her cooking and stuff. And then when they go to have sex, Tom gets frustrated because he feels like she's like forcing herself on top of him and won't let him get on top.
It's a made up problem. Yeah.
Like nitpicky at this point. Like, I don't know. Lynette gets frustrated with him right back, but Tom's like tired of all of it, kind of throws a fit. And then it kind of gets resolved relatively quickly. The next morning, whatever day it is, they're in the elevator at work and it's awkward, but he stops the elevator and tells her that the fight wasn't over. And so in order to save their marriage, he basically asks her if like he can be in control sometimes, which I feel like that is, if she's letting him be in control, she's still in control, but whatever. And then they end up fucking in the elevator. That's that.
Yeah. Hot. So if you want to learn how to solve a problem, just fuck them in the elevator.
That seems to be the key.
Find an elevator. There may not be an elevator in your building. Yeah. Just go find one. Yes. And that leaves us with Bree, I believe. She is still struggling with her alcoholism. Mm-hmm. Like, hardcore. Basically, she has this routine. I guess I'll take it from the top. She has a routine, and she would always reward herself with a glass of wine at the end. And that's, like, been her thing for, like, years and years, which we said it. We were like, dang, so you're having a glass of wine 3 times a week, like, before 11 a.m. Like, what a life, but also maybe a problem. Yeah. So this may have always been a problem. Either way, Andrew wants money for a car, which she denies him, and then he threatens to become emancipated. He finds a lawyer, but this is not until after she slaps him in the face, kind of drunk. She was also drinking wine in this incident. So she slaps him in the face because he was like mouthing off to her about the car. Finds a lawyer. He's like, I'm gonna get emancipated. And then Bree is still hitting the bottle really hard, and she's like, whatever, your plan is stupid. I guess I'm doing this kind of out of order, but main plot points, Andrew like hires his boyfriend. I wouldn't say hire. I guess he's like, do you love me or not? Because if you love me, you're going to punch me in the face with this high school class ring. And he does it not once, but twice and probably 3 times. So Andrew's all like bruised and bloody. And that's when the lawyer mm-hmm. comes, and Bree is like, what the fuck happened? And Andrew makes up a lie that when she slapped him, like, that was the result. He's like, you don't know your own strength when you're drunk. And then we see her, like, pouring out all her liquor bottles. And she's like, I'm going to get sober for you, Andrew. Like, you don't even know how far I'll go, how much I love you, yada, yada. You're not the man you could be. And Andrew is just like, let me go. Like, I hate mm-hmm. you. And she throws a bottle at the fridge and it breaks. It's very dramatic. Best scene. Great acting, both of them. Mm-hmm. But she breaks the bottle against the fridge and is like, I didn't fucking hear you. And he says, I hate you again, or louder. He says something different. But basically just he hates her, and she's like, yeah, well, get ready. I'm gonna fucking, like, not have you go to court. I'm gonna, like, perception is reality, mm-hmm. so I'm gonna go get sober. And that's that on that. Like, kiss your emancipation goodbye.
Yeah.
And then she starts going to AA, and you're like, what's good? That's incredible. Like, get that help, girl. But she comes home after AA and rewards herself with wine. So she is not sober.
Yeah. Not taking it seriously whatsoever. You'd think, like, your friend, like, putting out empty bottles on your lawn, like, would be more of a wake-up call. Like, I have to say, Bria is, like, but yeah. Bria's clinging.
She's ignoring all the red flags, for sure.
Honestly, if I passed out on my lawn, like, that would be the zinger for me. That would be the moment where I'm like, all right, time to get myself under a little more control here.
I can't say. I mean, Bree's under a lot of stress and pressure, but your son threatening to sue you and making up a lie about how you beat him is, like, pretty intense and insane.
Yeah. No, for sure. I feel like she's hit a lot of walls here. There's not many, there's not many places to turn.
The DUI would have been the wake-up call. That was the first thing.
I know, the DUI, passing out on your lawn. Like, there comes a point where I'm like, you can't only turn a blind eye so many directions. At a certain point, like, you're just blind. Like, I don't know. But I guess we'll find out what happens next today.
Yeah. And then Paul, Zach, and Mike are fooling around on the side. not in a sexual way, but just like Paul gets arrested mm-hmm. by dirty cop Sullivan, whatever his face is. The hot or not. I determined he's kind of hot sometimes in the right light in a parking mm-hmm. garage. But he arrests Paul because of Noah Taylor. And Paul is about to fucking, like, get murked in the back of this police vehicle, like, unlisted. Like, they just put him back there in his, like, financial, like, advisor suit or whatever, his button up. And this guy, like, pulls a knife on him. And Paul miraculously escapes. But before anybody knows that, Zach is freaking out. Mike is coming up with a game plan of what to do. He's, like, chatting with Felicia about how Paul got arrested. He's like, what's happening? And he kind of tells Zach the truth about Noah Taylor. But he's not like, I'm your dad. What's up? Let's hug. But he's like, Noah Taylor needs to meet you. Like, we need you as leverage. Like, your dad, some bad people are after your dad. And then Paul comes back. They agree to let Zach meet Noah just to get him off his back. Zach does a down and dirty monologue about how Paul is his real dad and Noah must never touch Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Those are his rules of, like, engaging with his biological grandpa here, I guess. And it was all pretty badass. Like, Paul got Jordan's fuck because he was so badass. Like, he pulled some jujitsu, like, ninja.
Yeah, like, it's fucking insane. I was like, what the hell's happening right now? Very impressive. Yes.
So that was what's going on with them. And Felicia was left mouth agape, like, watching Paul walk out of the police vehicle back home to his son. So.
Yeah.
Yes, great ep.
Yeah, it was a very entertaining episode.
Yeah, we might have included some stuff from a couple of different episodes in there, but that's where we're kind of at. Bree's got an alcohol problem. Gabby and Carlos searching for her kid. Susan's just dating a doctor, got her spleen removed. And then Lynette and Tom are just working.
Yeah. If you boil it down. Yeah.
If you want a one-liner, just that's what it is. So, but like I said, season 2, episode 17 today. But before we get to that, we have some desperate deeds.
Mm-hmm. I could go first.
I have a couple.
Okay.
If you're ready, just hit it. Just hit it. I'll follow your lead.
Okay. So this desperate deed happened when I had my last job at a hotel. And there was this time where I was taking calls and I got a call from a guest wanting to, like, purchase stuff to, like, have sent up, like, amenities to be sent up to someone's room. And at the time, this guy, my now boyfriend, but at the time, just some guy, he was in my office and being flirty, and I got, like, flustered on the phone, and I just, like, fucked up the whole thing. Like, I wrote down the card wrong, or no, I typed in the card and the information, and then I, like, forgot to ask for the guy's phone number, and then when the call ended, like, I accidentally deleted the card number. And I was like, Fuck. So I'm sitting there, and I didn't want this man to see me fail, so I was like, I'm gonna not say what just happened and play it cool. And in a desperate attempt to solve the situation, I paid for the amenities with my own card.
Shut up.
So,
oh my god, I can't believe you did that.
It was
that.
Awesome. I mean, I kind of had no choice, so we were gonna get a mad complaint, and it was just my fuck up. So I was like, well,
how much was it? Monetary,
it was like 45 amount. Bucks. So it wasn't a huge L, okay. But it wasn't. I didn't make very much money at the time, so that was a bummer.
That's a pretty big amount when you're just like making.
Yeah, so that was depressing.
$40, but
yeah, that's my desperate deed this week. Brutal.
yes. I have one. I don't think I lost any money in this desperate deed, but I certainly lost my dignity.
Oh, shit.
I had a problem in college, not unlike Breeze. I didn't have a drinking problem, but I was in a sorority. We did drink a lot. I went to a party school, so it wasn't unnatural to be drinking at least 5 times mm-hmm. a week, I'd say, at different parties or whatever. Not healthy, don't recommend it. And I don't drink like that anymore. But at the time, I was young, and like your body is just working hard for no reason. Like, you could do that shit. You could just party all night, go to work at 6 a.m. the next morning and just fucking kick it. Do homework, be smart. I don't know where my drive has gone. This particular, I don't know what happened. I was going through like a really volatile phase with like just some dudes that I was interested in, I guess. Like, because I had been dating this guy in one frat, and it ended. And then I ended up going to, like, a party at that same frat. And, like, seeing my ex with his, like, new girlfriend, basically. And it didn't feel mm-hmm. good. And I was there with some guy that I didn't really like, but he seemed cool enough.
Yeah.
His name, which I'll tell you, which I feel is a weird name, is Belson. He was cool, whatever. So we went to the date party. I went home in tears, so it was not a good impression. This was maybe my second time ever meeting this guy. And I literally cried like a baby on his lap, upset that we saw my ex. It was embarrassing. No. And that was not the desperate part yet. The desperate part is that then I felt conflicted because he was so nice. I was like, I kind of think maybe I like this guy, like, I'm embarrassed that I cried in front of him mm-hmm. like that, but like maybe I haven't lost my chance yet. And so I go to another party at this house later, like maybe 2 weeks later, and I'm like, hey, are you gonna be there tonight? And he's like, yeah, I'll be there, but he's like clearly not interested. And I see him at the party, we talk a little, like nothing's there, no sparks flying, because I literally sobbed like a child in front of him. And I got too drunk that night. I couldn't quite tell you like the logistics of the end of my night, but I wake up and I'm looking at my phone, and I was notorious for being a drunk texter. It was my downfall.
Oh, like, no.
That was my heroic flaw in college. Everybody was like, you need some sort of app that like stops you from sending these texts, like it's out of control. That's my breaking mm-hmm. point of when you're like, maybe like Bree is like passing out, I'm like, these text messages are my breaking point. And this one in particular was horrifying. I texted this kid Belson, and I couldn't tell you why. I feel like it was an act of desperation. It made no fucking sense. The text said, I want to buy you beans, Belson. I want to buy you beans. I want to buy you, like, pinto. Like, I, like, beans, like, B-E-A-N-S, beans.
Was it like a pinto, autocorrect
black
thing?
Beans, refried. I don't fucking
what
know. And I sat at breakfast that morning. I remember just looking at my phone. I was hysterically laughing. I'm like, I am out of control. This is too much. Like, I want. And the sad part was, I couldn't even, like, I was also laughing because I'm like, I can't pretend that this was an inside joke. Like, if it had just said, I want to buy you beans. Mm-hmm. I could have texted him and been like, sorry, inside joke, like, was at, like, a taco place last night or something. But it's the fact that I legitimately put his fucking name in the text message. I want to buy you beans, Belson. There was no way of getting
it. Was like your brain was like, I'm going to make sure that he knows that this was for him. Like, what the heck? Oh, no.
Clearly, this guy fucking didn't like me because I was being psychotic. I want to buy you beans, Belson, to this day, if you're out there.
We should get shirts with that on it.
I want to buy you beans. My worst drunk, that is forever seared in my head, the worst drunk text. And clearly I was desperate for his attention.
I love it. No, I love it.
10 out of 10.
Amazing.
Yes, hope you're ready for our episode. Jesus Christ. So that was a sleeper. I had to dig that one up.
I love it. I love it.
But today, season 2, episode 17, Could I Leave You? Go ahead and watch that on Amazon Prime or Hulu. And we'll be right back. But before we go, you know, we like to keep you safe and sound. So we're going to tell you to buckle up.
Buckle up.
After Susan's surgery, Dr. Ron meets Carl and Mike. Gabby and Carlos think they've found the perfect mother to adopt from. Drinking and shopping leaves Bree in an uncomfortable position. A new hire at Lynette's job isn't shy about breastfeeding. Matt Applewhite wants to surprise Danielle for her birthday, but Caleb does instead.
The breaking and entering just never ends here.
Oh, never.
We see it yet again.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're making it too easy. And also, let's recall when Brie has her cupboard of keys. Everybody's making it too easy to get into their houses, you guys.
Just handing out keys like it's candy. Is that what they hand out on Wisteria Lane for Halloween?
I guess. I don't remember. I don't think our neighbors, maybe like my mom's close friends' neighbors growing up. But we like did everything. Like we went camping together. Like maybe they had mm-hmm. a key.
Yeah, we had family friends that had keys, but not just like our neighbors. But I guess they're all technically friends, kind of, in Wisteria Lane.
Yeah, and nobody has a key to my house. Maybe I should change that, but it might be useful.
Yeah.
I used to be scared to death of dying alone, living alone, but my cat is here I don't scare anymore. Not something on my cat, really. I think that's when it really subsided. I was like, I'll be fine. I'm not going to die here. But we have some breaking and entering. Caleb and the Applewhites are back, baby. We get a stripper, which I noted maybe this is the strip club that Andrew went to first season.
Possibly. They only go to this
one. I'm like, topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
Yes, baby. We think that's where she works, potentially.
Fingers crossed.
So, strip clubs, breaking and entering. We're back. Season one energy, if we're really thinking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no. I totally agree with that.
We'll take you through everything that happens. There wasn't quite like a theme going through all the storylines, which I love a good theme, but we get some exciting things going on.
Yeah, we do. There's a lot of good storylines.
So it starts with Gabby, though. And like we said, we left them at an interesting point. They're trying to adopt a baby. So Marianne Young says that Gabby had always been a demanding shopper, and whatever the purchase, she always expected the very best. Whether it was an exotic perfume from Paris, fashion gowns from Milan, shoes from Manhattan, whatever it was. But on this day, her expectations were going to be put to the test because now she was shopping for a baby and there was a problem with the manufacturer. And I'm like, damn, everybody is just clowning on this girl. And I am not going to exaggerate at all. The mom is hideous. I wonder what it was like to be casted as hideous mom number one.
So I actually kind of put in my notes, I feel like they went so over the top, specifically so it wasn't like they were calling an actual actress ugly. Because they clearly, like, put false teeth on her, like, fake moles, the unibrow,
the hair
yeah, with the scrunchies. Everything. Like, they made her as, like, it's like in Home Alone when the ugly girl, it's a little boy dressed up as a girl. Because they felt bad, like, calling a little girl ugly. That's what I feel like they did here. They, like, went so far that it's not an actual person that looks like that. So it wasn't as mean. But it was still pretty fucking mean.
It can't be. Yeah, it was so mean.
Ooh, like, this is brutal.
Mary pronounce Young's problem with the manufacturer. Like, there's literally a defect in this human.
You could tell they tried to make it palatable, but it was still pretty gross.
Yeah, so ugly. And they're acting like, throughout this storyline, they act like any single unwed mother with a baby to give away is just, like, trash. They're like, anybody who is single and pregnant is ugly. Yeah. It's, like, the vibe I'm getting. They're like, we can't find anybody. And I'm like, it really can't be that hard.
Well, I think, because he says he's, like, a person that illegally is, like, selling their baby. But even so, like, there's pretty people that are conniving and want money. But, like,
I'm sure there's a pretty person that is willing to give them their baby. Yeah. But this mom is not a looker, as my grandpa would say. So she's sitting here. This woman is saying that she really wants to give her baby to people who have what it takes to be great parents. And Carlos is like, you won't find another couple with more love for a child. Like, right, Gabby? And he's like elbowing her because she's sitting there looking disgusted.
Yeah, like not even
Gabby
trying.
Yeah, it's just quiet. Just quiet. And she's like, let's go talk outside for a second. And Carlos is like, what the fuck is your problem? She's like, we have to find another mother. Have you looked at her? And he's like, why? Because she's plain. And I'm like, come on, Carlos. Like, don't act like you don't fucking see
it. He's like, she's plain. I was like, wow, that was a very diplomatic answer.
Good choice of words, mister. And she's like, no, because since she walked into our house, the clocks have stopped working. And I'm like, I've never heard that phrase, but I get it. So he's saying nobody can predict what a child will look like. For all you know, she could win beauty contests. And Gabby says for her DNA, it would be an only best in show. That's the best that we'll get. And then she's like, let's find another mom. And he's like, no, I'm not going to let your shallow obsession with looks screw this up. And he's like, I want a child, any child, which I'm like, Carlos, you can chill out. That's pretty desperate of you. Any child. I'll just steal one off the street. I'm like, that's child molester energy. Gabby says, know that when this child is born and you have to what did she say? She said, when this child is born, you're going to have to cuddle and snuggle with it all the time. And don't come crying to me when you have to look at that face. And then they go back in. And Carlos, like, can't fucking get it out of his head. We're getting, like, gruesome close-ups on this lady's face and her moles and her hair. And Carlos, like, can't look.
Well,
and
she's, like, licking guacamole off of chips. Like, it's the most disturbing thing I've ever, like... that was horrible.
Yes, it was disgusting. And so Gabby had always been a demanding shopper because she knew there were some purchases that can't be returned. So boom, into our intro. And we get in an obscure intro. At 6:10 the next morning, this chick who came over, the hairy mole chick, went into labor and delivered a baby that would eventually be an attractive boy. So Gabby, you really missed out, I guess. Then at 11:43, Dr. Hanson Mills cut the umbilical cord, forever separating a mother and child. And that exact same moment, Dr. Ron McCready, so we get a last name
finally.
This dude's Irish? McCready? I have to say that's Irish. Entered the room of Susan Mayer with every intention of severing their connection. And he's like, hey, yo, what's up? And she's like, about to be released. By the way, who is Mike? And she's like, what, why? And he said, just for the operation. I said, I love you. And you said, I love Mike. And she's like, what? Like, no way.
And then she's like, I don't know Mike. He's like, everybody knows a Mike, which I thought was actually really funny. I was like, that was a good line.
Yes. And even Carl says that later in this episode. Everybody knows a Mike. And she makes up something about a Mike from college, which, Susan, use your head. That was stupid.
Yeah.
Then he's like, anyways, okay, so that's who Mike is. Who are you married to? And she's like, fuck your nurse. She's awful. And then Dr. Ron, giving her too many chances at this point, is like, who's the guy you're cheating on? Which is him. So Susan reveals that she did a health insurance fraud with Carl and didn't want you to be involved. You know, that's what's going on. But if you want to come over for dinner next week, you can meet Carl and see that there's nothing going on between us, which this sets up a disappointing storyline all in all. So
Very contrived. All of Susan's storylines have been really contrived the past, at least the past 5 episodes.
Yes. And Ron, once again, giving her the 70th chance of the day, says, once you're fully recovered, you're going to divorce him, right? And she's like, yeah, I swear. And you're not in love with anyone named Mike? Yeah, sure. And Dr. Ron is stupid and says that he believes her.
Well, she doesn't even say it. Like, she's not convincing whatsoever. He's like, you swear you're not in love with Mike? She's like, sure. Like, she's like,
I, yeah, sure. I know. She whispers it.
She might as well have said no. Like, I'm like, what the hell?
And he's all like, do you pinky promise? Like, oh my God. I feel like they might as well do a secret handshake about it. Like, it's so just not for real. Like, it's so obvious. So
yeah. And she could have brushed. I honestly think she could have gotten away with being like, that's my ex-boyfriend. I was hyped up on drugs. The wrong name came out. Like, it doesn't mean anything. But by lying like this, I'm like, now you're making it seem like you got something to hide, sis. Like, what are you doing? Like, it was just such a stupid decision. Like, I just can't.
Susan, I think, has a compulsive lying problem.
I would agree with that.
She's lied about everything. Like, any person in their right mind would be like, I just need to tell the truth here. Like, I'm going to be honest and vulnerable. But she's like, just some guy from college, like, fucking really made something up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, easy way to get caught right there, sister.
Well, like, on top of that, too, Mike lives right by her. Like, they were bound to run into each other at some point.
Like, yeah, like, so let's say she keeps dating Dr. Ron McCready or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, he's gonna be around. Like, they're gonna introduce you. Like, yeah, you're right. They're gonna eventually, like, have to talk about Mike.
Yeah, so I don't know. Has she never talked about that time the kid held her at gunpoint? Does she not bother to tell him that story? Like,
she forgot already. Yeah. She's concerned about her spleen.
Yeah.
I just, yeah. So she's not thinking long term with Dr. Mike. We get it. But she's in a wheelchair for the duration of this episode, which I find annoying because they clearly did that on purpose, like, to try and do some physical humor. And either way, Bree and Gabby are at her house, like, looking at Gabby's potential baby mama eventually, but we'll go over that in Gabby's storyline. But just to finish off Susan, they're over there looking. Carl comes over and he's like, sup, babe? And Bree and Gabby are like, babe, like, what is he talking about? And then he, like, Susan's like, we need to talk in the other room. And he wheels her into the other room and they chat. And this is when Susan tells Carl what went down. She's like, I told him I loved Mike on accident, and I told him I didn't know a Mike, and Carl says the same thing. Everybody knows a Mike, which is true. We all know a Mike. You listening, you know a Mike somewhere. You've met one. Carl says the same thing, and Susan's like, I know it was fucking stupid. Okay, I get it. And Carl is just laughing at her, which I feel like he only hangs around her just to, like, laugh at her misery. But Susan invites him to dinner, and she's like, you got to come to dinner with Dr. Ron, and we have to show him that nothing is going on.
Not only that,
like, all right, I'll bring him the wine.
She also says, like, ditch Edie and you're having dinner here. And I'm just like, what is this dismissive? Like, oh my God. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
She's like, literally, dump Edie and come to dinner at my house. Yeah, it's like a quick scene. They just set up how they're going to have dinner. Carl keeps laughing at her. Bree and Gabby are on the couch talking while they're in the other room, and Bree is like, you didn't know them when they were together, did you? But Carl and Susan, like, I thought they were going to get back together before Mike. Like, they have really had sparks. They had chemistry, always laughing, super fun, like, that great couple. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I could see them getting back together, but, you know, this whole Mike thing. And then Gabby's like, what, really? And then Carl wheels her back in, and he's, like, laughing hysterically, and they're, like, seem to be having a jolly time. And Gabby and Bree make eyes, and they're like, whoa, are there sparks flying here? I don't know. And I don't know either, because we saw that one Valentine's Day episode where, you know, Susan's uncertain of whether she wants him to be with Edie, and, like, she's grappling with her own feelings, it seems. And then last episode, she's like, I love Mike. So Susan's really got her apples in all these different baskets, I guess. So not sure if there's sparks fly, but they finally get to dinner, and Carl and Dr. Ron seem to be having fun, and Carl's just roasting her. He literally calls her a pig to her face and snorts at her. I would feel annoyed at this. It seemed rather embarrassing, but she brushes it off. So that's what's going on. And, like, Ron says he never thought he'd have so much fun hanging with my girlfriend and her husband. Har, har, har. So funny. They go to clear the dishes and they're like, oh, we got it, Susan, you're in a wheelchair. But then Ron and Susan like start making out and Carl sees them and is like getting jealous, it seems. Mm-hmm. Then he sees Mike roll home in his Nissan truck and he gets an idea. He looks back at Ron and Susan making out and like basically opens up beneath the sink and like fucks with her pipes. So she has a plumbing problem. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Ron comes in and it's like this leak is insane. It's not just like a drip, drip, drip little leak. Like there's water everywhere.
It's spraying water.
It takes Ron at least like 20 seconds to notice anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow. So he's like, oh my God, this leak. And Carl's like, I'll sop up things. Go get that plumber across the street. So Carl knew what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah.
Susan's like, where is he going? And Carl's like, to get Mike. And Susan's like, oh, no. And Ron's like, yo, we need a plumber. And he's like, cool, I'll go get my shit. And he's like, thanks, Mr. Delfino. And he's like, you can call me Mike. And this is where it falls apart.
Yeah.
How long have you known Susan? He's like, a year and a half. And Ron's getting the gist now. And he's like, huh. And Mike's like, didn't she mention we dated? And he's like, no, she didn't. And then Susan's wheeling herself over there in her wheelchair. And Ron just starts screaming at her. And he's like, you lied to me. And Mike sees this. Because, okay, Ron kind of even pushes her. I think she's an aggressive, angry man.
Yes, but she did grab onto his arms. And he just yanked his arm away. Yeah. But he wasn't thinking about it because she's in a wheelchair. So I do think it was, like, an unfortunate, like, it made him look worse than it was. He probably shouldn't have been, like, huffing and puffing the way he was, though. Like,
yeah, this is the second time that he's, like, huffed and puffed out of her house over something. And I'm like, he seems to just not have a grasp on his anger.
Yeah.
But there we are. So he looks like he pushes her or whatever happens. And Mike sees this and is like, what the fuck? And if only he had his Glock, like, we would have had a man down. Carl's watching this because Mike fronts with Ron. And he's like, if you ever touch her like that again, I'll kill you. And Ron is like, get out of my face. And Mike's like, or what? And doesn't say anything. And Mike's like, thought so. Mm. And walks away. And then I think this is dirty, but Ron pushes him down from behind.
Yeah, he like sucker pushes him, I guess. Instead of
punching. He's like, bitch, and pushes him. They start to fight. And then Ron is freaking out at Susan at the same time. Can't believe I wasted my time with you. You're obviously still in love with him. And Susan's being fucking annoying. No, wait.
She's like whimpering, like,
come back.
She does that little sound
in her wheelchair.
Yeah.
And then before he gets in his car, he's like, don't call me. And then Susan gets mad at Mike and is like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, and then Mike says, I thought he was hurting you. And I'm like, yeah, Mike was just trying to be a good guy. Mm-hmm. Got it wrong, but he was trying to protect you.
Yeah.
And then Susan's like, well, he wasn't. And now my boyfriend's gone. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And rolls away.
And then Carl's like smirking in the window.
Yeah. Love it.
Quick note. Really quick note. Mike is like, oh, I've known Susan a year and a half. Yet literally in the last episode, it was made clear that Mary Alice died a year ago. They have no, like, this timeline is so out of control. Like, I just, I have no concept of time. Like, I'm so confused at this point. I'm sorry.
And we'll learn that Matt is 19.
Yes, I put that in my notes. Danielle's what, 15? 16? So, like,
there's another statutory rape situation. Like,
this is brutal.
What the hell? Oh my God.
I was literally going to bring that up later because I was like, okay, now I got another question about this timeline because Danielle was 15 in the first episode.
Yes. It's a lot of whack. So they know whatever, however long. Maybe he was exaggerating a bit. Who knows? But next thing we know, Susan is reading. Mike comes over and he's like, Julie, let me in. Susan is not having this. She's like, did you run out of strangers to beat up? Or are you just going house to house now? And I'm like, he was trying to protect you. And you don't even like Dr. Ron, whatever. So Susan then says an annoying line that she goes, if you don't want to be my boyfriend, fine. But don't scare off the only guy willing to do the job. And Mike is like, the way he was yelling at you was like not okay. And Susan says she deserved it. And I'm like, whoa, get your self-esteem back. You didn't deserve that.
I think that Ron deserved to be upset, but not at the level he was. And he could have expressed, I think he could have expressed his frustrations, and especially with her lies, a little bit better. But I don't think, Sousa did not deserve to get screamed at.
I think it was aggressive. He just seems to be off the handle. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, what did you do? And she's like, I said something before my operation, and it devastated him. He's like, what? I can't. And she's like, I can't tell you. And he's like, you can tell me anything. You know that. And then she gets a call from Dr. Ron, and she's like, hit the curb, mister. And Mike Leave is all sad. And he's like, can we talk about it later? And she's like, no, fuck off. And that's that.
This is also the same guy that she went to his house a few episodes ago to tell him that she was getting married for absolutely no reason. So I don't understand Susan's feelings towards Mike.
Yeah, or anybody. Yeah. She just got, like, she's around town right now.
It's a bummer.
I know you're sad that it ended, you guys, but that's all that's Susan wrote.
Well, moving on from Susan, I'll kind of jump onto Lynette's storyline, because it was fun. It was a little lighter weight, I think, compared to the other two. So basically, it opens with Lynette trying to poach this woman named Veronica. She's trying to get her over to work at their marketing firm. I guess this lady's some sort of genius based on how they treat her the whole episode. But while they're talking, she's giving her, like, donuts. And this lady, I even kind of noticed she was pounding two of them pretty quick there. And mm-hmm. Lynette's like, hey, like, how do you look so great, like, while eating, like, all these sweet treats? And the lady's like, oh, I'm, like, breastfeeding. It just keeps me super thin. It burns a ton of calories. And Lynette's like, oh, that's awesome. You have a kid? So she shows her the daycare center, and the woman's like, oh, yeah, as long as I'm able to breastfeed here, like, we're good. We got a deal. So Lynette's
like, she's like, sign me up. Perfect.
Lynette's like, this is awesome. Hell yeah. So the next time we see them, they're looking over some proposal at work, and Veronica's nanny shows up. And Lynette's on the phone with Tom, so she's just kind of like, yeah, whatever, you know, listening to Tom talk. And she watches as Veronica walks over to her son Donovan, who is clearly too old to be sucking on a breast.
He's like a 10-year-old.
Yes.
He's not. He's like 5. We find out, but he's too old. Yeah. He's clearly too old.
No. And, like, Lynette, like, kind of, it was actually, this was really funny to me. She kind of is, like, listening to Tom and is like, yeah. Clearly not listening, like, watching, kind of following her. And she, like, is peeking into the, like, office room where this lady is breastfeeding her 5-year-old. And I had to laugh because at one point, like, everybody in the office is kind of peeking and they all realize what's happening. And Ed, their boss, is like, oh my God. And the way he fucking says that, it, like, zoinks off the screen. Like, I don't know why, but that made me laugh out loud. Like, it was
hilarious. Yeah, this one was funny.
Yeah, and his, like, I like Ed because he's kind of a ditz. I feel like moments like that are really funny. But anyway, I also had to ask, like, she should just fucking pump. Like, I don't understand. Like, it's still she would still get all the benefits of breastfeeding if she just pumped, but whatever.
She likes a mouth on her tit, I guess.
So the next time we see them, Veronica leaves in the middle of this meeting to go breastfeed, and everyone is, like, stressing out about it. Like, they can't even eat their food. They're so disgusted by this, apparently.
I love that they're eating bagels with cream cheese.
Yeah, they're like, they drop it. Yeah. So Lynette agrees that it's weird. She's like, no, this is weird, but we need her more than she needs us. Like, she's, like I said, this lady's apparently a marketing genius.
She's a magician. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. So they basically, like, ask Lynette if she can talk to her. And Lynette's like, why do I have to do it? And they're like, well, because you're a woman and are more delicate with these things. Which is true, I guess. Like, it would be awkward for a male coworker to be like,
if this dude was like, yo, stop breastfeeding in here.
And then there's, like, this weird moment where one of the guys is like, I can't talk to her. I made a pass at her yesterday. And I'm like,
I know.
I was like, what was this weird sexist joke?
Like, the nerdiest looking dude in there, too.
Yeah. And so Lynette's like, fine, I'll do it. But you're all wimps. And Ed's like, we're okay with that. Like, he's just like, all right. Like, whatever makes you feel better about it. So later on, Lynette is talking to Veronica about it and brings up pumping, which I guess, you know, my question was asked too soon, but Veronica immediately picks up on what Lynette, like, she reads between the lines. She's like, do you, basically saying, like, breastfeeding's not that weird as you guys all think it is. It's his decision. In third world countries, they fucking breastfeed till they're 6 or whatever. She's throwing out all these crazy, like, comments about it.
Like, breast milk is thought to raise IQ scores.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so Lynette is like, well, in third world countries, they don't have juice boxes. And I was like, oh my God. And so then, yeah, that's when she's like, well, you know, breastfeeding gives children higher IQs. And she's like, and then they kind of like show her kid being like, not a terror and just doing normal kid things. And then it shows Lynette's kids just like flipping tables for no reason and going absolutely insane. And so
like the next day, Lynette went home and breastfed. Yeah.
And so then she's like, if you have any problems with it, you could talk to my lawyer about it. And I'm like, kind of badass, I guess, for her standing up for herself, but she has to understand optically, regard, whatever. So
yeah, that it's like not appealing. It's weird.
Yeah. And I'm not against breastfeeding, but this does bring up is like a point though where you're like, yeah, like it is a little strange for a kid who understands what a boob is to be like,
if your kid can read like 10 words.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, maybe. I don't know. I just feel like if your kid's like, I've never had a kid though, but I could guarantee I would not breastfeed. Not parents. Yeah. This
is how we feel now. Mark this down.
Yeah.
But
so the key to this last scene was her saying that it was Donovan's decision on whether or not he's going to stop, which I'm like, that's a weird thing too, because I feel like a kid of 5 isn't going to comprehend that, but whatever. The next time we see Lynette, Donovan is like looking for his mom. I guess this office just has kids like running rampant. And Lynette,
he says, I'm thirsty.
Yeah. And so Lynette is drinking a chocolate milk. And this is what really threw me off.
Nobody does that.
Yes. So at first I was like, oh, she's drinking the chocolate milk. Like, this was her plan, like to have this kid find her with the milk. But no, because she walks out the office and then it dawns on her to have him try the chocolate milk. So I'm like, oh, Lynette's just drinking chocolate milk. Like,
she's at the office drinking the chocolate milk.
That's so, yeah. That to me is almost more upsetting than seeing a 5-year-old breastfeeding. I'm going to be honest. I was like, this grown-ass woman drinking a tiny carton of chocolate milk? No. But
what was worse?
Yeah, not okay. So she gives it to him and he like fucking loves it. And then later on, Lynette finds Veronica like in tears because Donovan told her he doesn't want her breast milk anymore. And as she's crying, Lynette's like trying to comfort her, and then twist, it's all about the weight gain, baby. She's like, I'm going to get fat. I'm going to have to join a gym. She starts, like, freaking out. And Lynette just, like, loses all sympathy and just leaves the room.
She's like, wow, bummer.
Yeah.
But I'm, like, with this chick. I'm like, shit, am I going to be breastfeeding till my kid is 5 or 10?
I didn't know the breastfeeding, like, burned that many calories.
I really don't think it burns calories, like, there's no way that it, like, burns more calories because you literally are just sitting there. I guess, like, internally it burns the – I heard it helps you lose the bloat and the weight, like, in the beginning, mm-hmm. like, the first year, because you have so many fluids and, like, weight gain. Mm-hmm. I have heard that, but I haven't heard, like, up to the age of, like, 3 or 5 or whatever. I don't know the statistics.
Yeah.
Don't come at me.
Someone who has, like, breastfed, reach out to us, because I actually kind of have – like, I kind of want to know, like, is any of – is this story even – does it make any sense? Because I do need to know. But it was a fun story. I thought it was a cute twist on the, like, breastfeeding debate in the office. Like,
I thought it was before its time.
It was kind of before its time. Yeah, absolutely. But I really enjoyed that plot line. I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
You know, a little light, but fun.
I have heard the benefits of, like, breastfeeding until they're around 3, I thought. 5 is a bit much. Mm-hmm. But if they're walking and talking, like, ugh, no.
I don't know. If your kid walks up to you and says, I'm thirsty, and is, like, coherently forming sentences, like,
yeah,
I don't know,
I'm like, you can get yourself some water.
Yeah.
Like, chocolate milk
or okay. I mean, and I think at that point too, like, why don't you just pump at that point, because it's all the same benefits are still there, and now you don't have to, like, awkwardly have your 5-year-old suck on your boob,
your nipple.
Like, she could easily still, like, she would still be, it's the same as actually breastfeeding for her, and yeah. Then, like, the kid's still drinking the same milk, so I'm like, now I'm almost like, it's kind of weird that you actually, like, need him to suck on your boob instead of doing it a different way. Yeah. But okay.
And that shit does damage on your boob.
Oh, her nipple's probably fucked up.
Yeah, it's looking awkward.
Yeah.
But somebody who's going to avoid all that is Gabby, because she is trying to adopt a baby with Carlos. And after our opening scene, we see them now looking at literal mugshots, I said, of potential moms. Like, they mm-hmm. look like mugshots. They're lined up. They're all looking gross. And I'm like, wow, this is where we start to see that apparently they just think any unwed single pregnant person is like hideous. So each girl's uglier than the next. And they're trying to find a gorgeous girl that's giving away their kid. And their lawyer is like, somebody doing that, giving their kid to an ex-con, it's like not a walk in the park. Mm-hmm. And Gabby basically calls him an asshole in some way or another. And he's like, you would catch more flies with honey than vinegar. And she's like, if I wanted to catch flies, I'd bring one of these girls in here. And then we meet Libby Collins, or Lily. I'm not sure.
It's Libby.
Libby. Mm-hmm. Okay. Libby Collins. And they're not, they don't have high expectations. They're not expecting much. Their lawyer invited her to come meet them. And if this girl isn't enough, like, he doesn't know what to do. Gabby is holding firm in her stance. She says, now is not the time to quit, skip on quality. We have to stare at this face for the next 18 years. And I don't mind that Gabby's thinking that way. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. Libby is hot, though, and Gabby is getting behind this. Libby is pretty skanky hot, mm-hmm. as we bring back the word skanky from last episode.
Yeah.
So she tells her story. She got pregnant. It was the worst thing ever because she went into debt and she had to stop performing because she's a pole dancer. And her dream is to become a choreographer. She came up with a move that everyone does. And Carlos makes a creepy comment. He's like, we'll have to come see you at the club sometime and make a night of it. And I'm like, ew. They ask who the dad is. She's like, I don't know. There's a lot of guys in and out. And hope you don't think I'm a slut. And we know that everybody in Wisteria Lane does, because mm-hmm. they hate sluts.
They do. They're slut shamers on Wisteria Lane.
They slut shame. So Gabby's like, not at all. We just can't help but notice how pretty you are. So they go on and on. They're like, let's adopt this baby. This girl wants some compensation, aka a Harley Davidson in her mind. So she's that type of trashy. Mm-hmm. And not that Harleys are trashy, don't get me wrong.
It was an odd thing for her to bring up, though. I felt like it didn't really fit.
I think the way that they're painting her with the Harley, it adds up mm-hmm. to being kind of trashy. But before she leaves, she's like, thank you, Mr. Soulless, Mr. and Mrs. Soulless. Mm-hmm. And I think that's funny, Soulless.
Yeah.
And they're horrible people, but they're like, Soulies, thank you. And they're like, what kind of name? Or she says, what kind of name is that? And they're Mexican from Guadalajara. Shout out. And she's like, huh, thought you were Italian. And Gabby's proud, loud and proud. Nope, Latino. And she's like, good for you. Bye.
Yeah, he's like, we're Mexican and proud of it. And that's what she's like, good for you.
Yeah. And this chick's like, bye. And that's when we know, this is what I've been waiting for. I've been waiting for some sort of storyline where we address the fact that there was discrimination against them. Mm-hmm. So here it is. This girl is low-key fake racist, and we'll find out why. So next thing we know, Gabby and Carlos are talking about it because Carlos gets a call from the lawyer that Lily is, like, not down anymore. And he said, like, I guess the lawyer just said it's because you're Mexican, which he could have been more discreet. And that's discrimination. And he's like, well, it's her baby and she can do what she wants. And we're trying to buy it illegally. So I guess we're shit out of luck. And Gabby gets pissed. You can't just toss people aside because of the color of their skin. And he's like, well, you tossed aside all these birth mothers because they're ugly. She's like, that's different. The Constitution doesn't protect ugly people. And I'm like, put that on a shirt. But
yeah,
she says that she's going to go down to the strip club, show this chick her tax refund, and then it's just going to change the game, I guess. So at the strip club, they're playing Don't Ya by the Pussycat Dolls.
Noted that too. I was like, what year is it, folks?
Don't ya. Do. Yes. So there we go. And Lily is like instructing some girl on her hot move or whatever. Gabby walks in looking pretty damn hot, and even the stripper notices. She's like, hey, lady, you're cute. And Gabby's like, so do you believe that I'm rich now? And this girl is like, no. She said, I can clean up well for a quote unquote, this is not my phrasing, wet bath.
I know. I was like,
and ooh. I'm like, wow, they threw that in there. Mm-hmm. And she says she's not a racist. She just wants what's best for her baby girl. Why give it to some middle class Mexicans when she can get rich white people? It's horrible. But Gabby's like, we're not middle class. Like, she says, you didn't seem rich when your husband wouldn't buy me a Harley. And this chick is like, and Gabby's like, what do you want? Like, you like jewelry? Here, take this necklace. And I'm like, Gabby is way too happy to pawn off jewelry. She gave one to her slave maid. Now she's giving it to this baby mama for no reason.
And it's a 3-carat diamond. That diamond alone is like $100,000.
Yeah. And this chick is like, is it real diamonds? I've never held a real diamond. And, you know, you can have my baby if you basically, like, give me what I want. And they don't tell the lawyer. This is the stripper's idea. Libby, she says, we shouldn't tell the lawyer because of percentages. And Gabby's like, whatever, I hate math. And they just shake on it. And I'm like, I would never. Mm-mm. Like, this is just the setup. Like, you could be the dumbest person watching the show and you know this is the setup for, like, this chick isn't going to give them her baby. Mm-hmm. So Gabby's about to leave and she's like, you never did actually care if we were Mexican. And she's like, no. And she's like, then why did you put me through this? And she's like, it looked like you weren't going to, if it looked like you weren't going to get my baby, you'd be more generous. And Gabby's like, you're smarter than I thought. And she's like, I'm smarter than everyone thinks.
And I'm like, remind you of someone, Gabby? Because that was a very Gabby thing to say.
I feel like Gabby, after I watched this, I was like, she met her match. Mm-hmm.
I have to say, like, Gabby, like, this is something where I almost feel like Carlos is such a good businessman, like, but they're doing everything wrong in a negotiation. Like, they're making it clear how desperate they are. They're making it clear what they're willing to give. They're now doing everything, like, it was already a iffy situation legally, and now they've made it, like, just... You're right. Like, they're setting it up for a disaster by doing a handshake with this woman who Gabby literally just confirmed that she was manipulating them.
Yeah, she knew in her heart.
And then it's all confirmed. I'd almost be like, maybe I do want the lawyer actually to be involved with this.
Yeah, I'd be like, we're going to get some lawyer. Like, we'll agree to give you more, but I still want it all in writing and stuff. Like, and then at the end, we see that she actually has a boyfriend who is the baby daddy, and it's like they set it up perfectly. She's like, everything's going good for our little baby girl. Like, they're going to keep it. Like, I don't even know what they said, but you get the scene at the
end. Yeah, they're like rubbing the belly, doing all that.
Yeah, she knows who the daddy is, so... Lies, lies, lies. Yeah, somebody who's been drinking a lot still is Brie.
Yeah, so our other heavy hitter this week was Brie. It opens on her story with her at AA, listening. It's group therapy, basically.
She's like, what is that? You have this hobby too. It's the cross.
She's embroidering.
Embroidering. I wanted to call it cross stitching in my notes.
Yeah, so just for our listeners, I like to embroider now. That's like one of my new little hobby things. And people can mix it up. I used to think it was an interchangeable, like, cross-stitch and embroidering, but they're actually very, very different. But her embroidery looked beautiful, but also, that's a lot of shit to have to bring with you and take care of when you're there, but whatever. So, she's at AA, and the AA, like, group leader asks her if she, you know, wants to talk, and she's like, no, I can't top that, like, the last guy that told his story. And she's just, you know, being her typical Brie self. So after the meeting's over, she's cleaning up, and he comes back up to her and asks her how long she's been sober. And she says, oh, I don't know. And then he's like, oh, you're still drinking? Because I've never met a single sober person that didn't remember the exact, like, last time they had a drink.
I know, for real, though. That was mistake number one. I know.
She fucking, like, played herself.
I don't know. I've just been sober for a while. Yeah. It's like, when you go to an AA meeting or you know somebody who's been sober, they have, like, a birthday. They call it a birthday.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Yeah, no, like,
the day you... celebrate that. If you're sober, celebrate
If you give it up, like, if you give up a substance that's, like, wrecking your life, yeah, like, that's a big deal. Like, you will forever remember that. But
Brie's like, IDK, kind of sober.
Yeah. So then she immediately comes clean and tells him that she is drinking, and she that she is not an alcoholic, and that she's coming because of everything going on with Andrew. So we kind of discussed it at the beginning of the episode, but Andrew's basically suing her for emancipation, and he's using her alcoholism and things like that against her. So, did we get the name of the guy that is her AA leader? Like, the guy leading the group?
I didn't get his name either. No.
So, he gives her his card, and he tells her that if she ever has a problem or needs to talk, that he is there, you know, for her. She claims she... And then she says that she doesn't have a compulsory, like, I don't know.
A compulsive personality. Yeah.
And he's like, oh, okay, sure. And then it, like, pans to the table, and it's, like, meticulously organized, but whatever. So The next time we see Bree, she's bringing food to Andrew and his lawyer in Andrew's room. And Andrew's like, Mom, like, get out of here. This is privileged information. And she's like, I'm still your parent. Like, I'm still invoking my parental rights and I'm going to be polite. So, like, they kind of have, like, this back and forth. But the real important thing to take away from the scene is the lawyer tells Andrew that once Bree leaves that they don't really have a case anymore. Now that Bree is going to AA, it's pretty much killed his chance. That was, like, his one thing that he had against her.
The silver bullet, they called it.
Yeah. And so he's like, if this, like, you need to find a way to get her to emancipate you voluntarily, because if this goes to court, presentation is what matters. And he's clearly, your mother knows how to present herself. And he's like eating the sandwich and it's like a nice spread. And Andrew looks frustrated.
And Andrew didn't miss a chance to call his mom a bitch.
Scene. Hell no.
He was like, get me away from this bitch. Yeah. After she made him food.
Like, he's so nasty for no reason.
He's such an asshole.
So the next time we see Bree, she is at a department store. I'm going to assume it's Nordstrom because there is a bar and she's having wine.
That's what I said. I was like, what's happening?
Yeah.
It's Nordstrom up in here.
My step-grandma one time got drunk at a Nordstrom and, like, was talking to mannequins. So that was pretty great. But
that's, like, peak 1990s. Oh, yeah. Getting drunk at a Nordstrom.
Yeah. And oh, my Lord. So she's having a glass of wine and shopping, and she looks over and sees Justin and Andrew. So she decides to walk over there, and she confronts him for not being home since he's grounded. And she's like, how are you even paying for this? And he whips out her credit card, which he stole. And she's like, I'm going to tell your lawyer about this. Like, this is unacceptable. Like, this is crazy. And at this point, Andrew tells her that she's not going to talk to the lawyer. She's not going to do any of that. And she's like, why? And he's like, because of my childhood. Like, and she's like, what about your childhood? Yes. She's like, your childhood was, like, the most perfect childhood I've ever heard of. And he's like, well, now, like, things are starting to come back to me, like, some forms of abuse. And she's like, abuse? I never hit you. And he's like, not that kind of abuse. And he starts, like,
I know.
It was really fucking creepy, actually.
It was really fucked up. Like, this is beyond, like, I can't even get behind crazy Andrew in this. Like, this is where I do draw the line. Yeah,
so he starts saying, like, I have repressed memories of sexual abuse. And Bria is, like, shocked, and she's like, you're not gonna, like, no one will believe you. And he's like, it doesn't matter. He's like, they'll always wonder. Like, it'll always be what people think of now, like, if when it gets out, like, when they see you. They'll say that they believe you, but they'll always wonder.
And that's true. There's, like, and, like, always believe the victim, but it's true. Like, there's multiple trials of, like, I think specifically I heard one that was, like, this daycare in the Northeast, but they got accused of, you know, sexually abusing children, and it ended up being all lies. Like, none of it was real. Mm-hmm. And, like, that follows you forever. Yeah. But, like, you always should believe that. It's, like, tough line, but, like,
yes.
I feel bad if it ruined your life, like, and you didn't do anything.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this is, like, an example of, like, how these types of situations can be used to manipulate people. And
yeah, for sure.
So he starts talking about sexual abuse, and Justin is kind of in the background, and you can tell that he's uncomfortable. And at this point, she's so shocked that he's stooping to this level, and Andrew takes the card back, and he's like, I'm gonna go buy Justin something nice. And as they walk away, Justin kind of, like, turns to Bree and gives her this, like, very ominous look, and you could tell that he's not comfortable with where this is going. Like, he's not behind
not
this.
At all.
He was already uncomfortable punching Andrew in the face in that lie. And now, like, this is weighing. You could tell this is weighing on him. But
this relationship is gonna set Justin up for, like, a future of, like, failure.
Oh, yeah, no. He's in relationships. He's gonna be fucked,
like,
up. Yeah. So at this point, Bree goes back to the bar and has more wine, which I don't blame her. Alcoholic or not, if your kid starts lying about shit like that, like, yeah, I'd drink too.
If your kid's like, I'm going to accuse you of sexual abuse, you're going to be drunk.
Yeah.
That day.
So next thing we know, it cuts to her waking up, and it's dark. The department store is locked up, and she is on the floor in the dressing room in a green gown, which I was telling Julia, I've seen this gown in person. They had it on display at Hollywood Studios at Disney World. And I fangirled about it in eighth grade. But anyway, she's laying on the ground. She comes to from passing out. And she is confused, but she gets out of the dressing room and realizes what's happening and that she's locked in. So
I'm also like, nobody found her. What
yes.
the fuck?
Okay, this is also my notes. This is also my notes. Julia and I worked at Macy's. They do a sweep.
Like, I know. I was gonna say, you don't like fall. You don't. No.
They would never just leave a person. Like, there's maybe other places she could have been passed out, possibly, where this could happen, but
never at a Nordstrom or Macy's would they allow this.
No. So she's changed. Next thing we see, she's changed and she's running to different doors and finally decides she's going to try and pry open this gate because it's like they have like those gates inside before the actual doors. And she uses this like mannequin arm and squeezes herself between it and the mannequin arm snaps and now she's like stuck in the gate. Like she's.
It was great.
Yeah. So she realizes that like she has to do something. So she ends up calling the guy from AA. I guess that's what we're going to call him for now.
Like, yeah, he's on my hot or not list right now.
I know. So he.
I can't tell.
Yeah, him. I can't. There's like moments where I'm like, eh. And then there's moments where I'm like, eh. But he shows up to help her, and the security guy is, like, getting her out. And we see a very early selfie where the security guy is like, no one's going to believe me. And he takes his flip phone out and takes a selfie. I was very, like, impressed. That was also before its time. You could say that this episode pioneered a lot of things.
A lot of things.
She gets out, and they're talking in the car, she and this AA guy. And she tells him everything that's happening with Andrew. And she... Like, it's really weird because, like, he makes a comment. He's like, wow, like, I don't know whether to think your son's, like, cool or not. And she's like, and then he goes, you're definitely raising an alpha male. And I'm like.
I know. I was like, you mean a psychopath?
Yeah, like, what does that even mean? But that was just I need to meet the person that wrote that line in there because that was awful. But
alpha male. That was taking advantage of everyone around him.
That was really up there with the guy in the meeting in Lynette's story that was like, I tried to, like, make a pass at her. Like, it was just, like, a very weirdly, like, throwaway line of, like, sexism.
They let, like, a writer's assistant. Terrible. Like, write these lines. It was his first time.
So bad. But anyway. Bree still keeps denying that she has a problem, but he's like, hey, like, you just passed out in a store, like, that's a problem. And she just, like, starts, you could see, like, the wheels turning as she's starting to, like, accept the reality of the situation. But then she kind of goes in this little monologue and she's like, I wish you could have known me when Rex was alive and when my kids were young. She's like, you really would have liked me. And he says, I do like you. And she starts to cry and, like, says, I don't like myself. And
I said chills.
It was sad. It was super sad.
It was good.
I think that's like the moment that she's finally accepting her issue is like, oh shit, I hate myself and I'm fucking like passing out drunk. There is another part of this story that involves Danielle, but it's more the Applewhite story. So I figured we would kind of make that one its own thing.
Yeah.
But that's basically where Bree's plot ends.
Yeah. Brie gave me some chills at the end there.
Absolutely.
Loved her monologue. Yes, so the Applewhites, Matt, we find out, is 19. we know this because he comes downstairs while Betty Applewhite is softly slaying on the piano. Like, just chill day, just slaying, like playing like a Mozart piece. And Matt comes downstairs and he's like, he's sulking still from being slapped like 10 episodes ago. But he's like, can I have $50? And she's like, what for? And he's like, well, it's Danielle's birthday and I want to get her something nice. And I was like, inflation is out here.
I know.
I'm like, $50?
Is it 1930?
$50? $50? What are you going to get with $50? They get in a huge fight and she's like, in that case, you can't have any fucking money because fuck Danielle. We hate her. And Matt's like, you think I like this? If only I could get a job. I'm 19. And I'm like, whoa. So you are committing statutory rape, mister. And they get in an argument and she says, taking care of Caleb is your full-time job. And he's like, let's just institutionalize this bitch. I'm tired of being at home all the time. And Caleb rolls downstairs and he's like, what are you guys fighting about? And they lie. And somehow it's brought up that it's Danielle's birthday again. I think Matt just says it. And I'm getting money to buy her a nice gift. I'm thinking something like jewelry. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, $50? Where are you going, Claire's? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
So he buys her some jewelry that's going to give her an infection, I guess.
Well, she only gives him $20.
He only gets $20 out of this deal. So, yeah. By Matt, he's off to the store, off to Limited 2 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I don't know when, but Andrew is away. Bree is away from the house. Danielle rolls home in a terrible outfit. Mm-hmm. Like the outfit that Jordan said she wore to that event last week, your Mission Inn outfit where you...
yeah.
Well, like, I feel like Danielle got caught in like a bad situation. She was wearing like a sweater over a bad shirt with pants that didn't fit very well.
Yeah.
I'll stop harking on Danielle. Sorry that I'm acting like Gabby and Carlos with their parents, but hated it. She looked awful. And then she comes home and she's like, Mom, Andrew, nobody's home, but her door is slightly ajar. And she goes in, and at first I think it's Matt there surprising her with some jewelry, but no, it's Caleb, and he's holding a brooch, like a blue brooch. Mm-hmm. And he's like, happy birthday, I wanted to get this for you. And she was like, ew, freak. And I'm like, whoa, you could have just... Okay, scary that he broke and entered.
Absolutely.
He broke and entered. Mm-hmm. We've been saying this. We're like, how is he getting away with this? Like, anybody can just get into anybody's house. Like, mm-hmm. remember Zach broke and entered into the Vandekamp's household last season, but whatever. Caleb got in and she's like, ew. And then she slaps it away from him and she's like, no, thank you. You can fucking leave. And I was worried that she was going to get her little neck strangled, mm-hmm. but didn't happen. He just leaves and she closes the door and is like, so that's that.
It's sad because I feel like if they like her locking Caleb away and stuff and making him have to sneak around is what's is freaking everybody out. Like, if he was able to be, like, socialized and people were aware of him, like, it's sad. I get why, obviously, she's hiding him, I guess, but, like, it's just sad that that's, like, painting him as this, like, monster.
I know. Or if Danielle was, like, and also, I just feel like Caleb didn't kill, okay, this is my plot twist prediction. It was not Caleb who fucking killed Melanie Foster. It was Mama Applewhite in a crazed fit because she's, like, in love with her son.
Interesting. Wow. Well, take your bets, listeners.
I feel like I'm about to be on the money because, yeah, Danielle could have been nicer. Like, I get that it's scary that some random dude is in your room, but she should also understand that he's mentally disabled.
Yeah, and, like, Matthew's, like, told her everything. I don't know.
Yeah, and she's like, freak. And I'm like, oh, my God, fucking chill.
Yeah.
So that's where we leave the Applewhites. We hope that Paul is still just alive somewhere, like practicing his jujitsu or whatever. We don't know much about Paul and Zach this episode. Mm. But at the end, Mary Alice Young takes us out as always. At the precise moment that Dr. Hanson Mills was cutting the umbilical cord, other ties were being cut as well. Like the one between a mother and child. And we see the weird breastfeeding mother. Who didn't want him to grow up so quick, or the one between a case of fine wine and the housewife that didn't want to admit she had a problem. So we're like, is Bree finally quitting? And then they said, or the one between a woman and the boyfriend who couldn't forgive her betrayal. And that's Dr. Mike on the phone with Susan. The choice to separate from what we love is a tough one. The only thing worse is when someone we've trusted makes the choice for us. And we see little Libby Collins with her boyfriend about to pull a fast one on the Solis family. So there we have it. It was, now that we've gone over it, I went into this and I was like, I don't know if it's my fave, but I do like what was going on. So
yeah,
feeling good, feeling great.
Okay. Well, do you have your fuck, marry, kill locked and loaded?
Yes. Unfortunately, I have to kill Andrew again. Mm-hmm. He's getting out of hand and I can't do it. He needs to die. So that's my kill. For my fuck, I'm going to have to go with the new sponsor, Bree's, like, AA sponsor. Mm-hmm. I just feel like he's a cool dude who, like, I don't know. I just really like him. I'd like a night out with him, yeah. You know.
He has a good vibe.
He comes to your rescue. He's got a good vibe. He's sober. Mm-hmm. Great. Love that. He's got his head on right. He's overcome some challenges. Mm-hmm. I really like him. He seems like he'd be a good, like, one night stand. Like, you wouldn't be ashamed of that. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I'm not giving him a marry is because, I have to marry Mike this episode because I really, although you made the point that Dr. Ron did not push Susan, I liked the way that Mike was so protective of Susan. I was like, dang, he's about to kill this guy for you.
Yeah.
In your little wheelchair. So I know it might be predictable marrying Mike, but he really was my hero this episode.
Yeah, he was great. He was great. I agree with for sure the fuck or the kill. We gotta kill Andrew. Andrew's gotta go. He took it one step too far. I'm like, I was kind of vibing with your manipulation, but now I'm like, I don't know. So he's gotta go. I'm gonna probably, I'm gonna have to agree with you also on our AA leader here. Cause yeah, he's got a good vibe.
Fuck him, yeah. He's got a good look.
I just like his energy. I like the way he talks to her. I think he's like very patient. It sounds like just based on what we've seen, and he's seen it all. So yeah, and then Mary, I'm like looking at my notes. Like, who would I marry? probably. Oh no. I don't want to take all the same ones.
It's the same. I love when we're lying.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the same because, yeah, Mike was a real hero and cares, and I liked that.
Yeah, he's not even mad that Susan's married and is dating some other
dude. Well, even though he's very cold with her sometimes, but not other times. Very strange.
Hey everyone, thank you for listening this whole entire episode. We had some technical difficulties and happened to lose the last part of our podcast for this episode, but we can tell you that Lynette got Housewife of the Week and both of our Apple ratings were in the 4-point range. So we know that it's such a fun part of our podcast, one of our favorites, but it didn't make it on this week. So thank you for listening. And as always, you can follow us on Instagram, on Twitter. We appreciate any follows on Spotify and liking and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. Next week, we'll be dropping on Monday. It'll be season 2, episode 18. We always appreciate you listening, reaching out through any type of DM or email. And hopefully next week, we won't have any technical difficulties and you'll get to hear our full review. Thank you so much. And as always, know your neighbors. Thank you.